Thank you. This is also a joint work with Tanya Laga from Technical University of Eindhoven. I'd like to start this story with a paper from Gaudry and Schoest from 2012 about a certain number theoretic computation where what they said about the computation, among other things, was that it took more than 1 million CPU hours. If you think there's about 8,000 hours in a year, then that means about 125 years on one computer. From my own personal experience, I can assure you that it's rather difficult to extract data from a computer that's 125 years old. Fortunately, this computation is parallelizable, so they were able to run it on something like 250 computers for half a year. But if you think how much money went into that, how much it costs to have 250 computers where, okay, they could do other things during other time, but for 6 months all occupied, and even the electricity, probably 30, 40,000 euros of electricity just to run this computation. So it's not the sort of computation you would casually do. It's something where you think about it and optimize it, which is most of what their paper is about. And I'd like to rewind a bit further to what their motivation was for doing the computation. Their motivation was another computation, which is much smaller, well, depending on the sizes of the numbers being added and multiplied here. This second computation is shown to you on the slide on the right. So what is this computation doing? Let me start from the top. It's just additions, subtractions, multiplications, divisions, with some inputs like x2, y2, etc. That Hadamard there, that's a 4x4 matrix. It's ones on the top and ones on the left, and ones on the diagonal, minus ones elsewhere. So it's a Z-mod 2 times Z-mod 2 Fourier transform, which of course you do with a fast Fourier transform, saving a few additions and subtractions. That's the last that I'll say about additions and subtractions. But Gaudry and Schoest were very much motivated by the number of multiplications in this picture. After you've gotten, for instance, x2 plus y2 plus z2 plus t2, then you multiply that by 1 over a squared. The reason I'm writing that in a compressed form as instead of saying divided by a squared as another input is that, well, first of all, this way fits on the slide, but more importantly, I want to suggest to you that the 1 over a squared is something which is going to be used a lot. It'll be repeated doing this computation many times, and therefore you can do pre-computations with it, like, well, invert 1 over a squared once and for all, and then you just do a multiplication. So there won't be any divisions in the operation.
And what are these real numbers? What are these?
That's an interesting question. I'll get back to that. I mean, so far, everything I'm doing here is defined over Z adjoin whatever. I mean, it's you know, this is expressing some rational functions in Z adjoin x2, y2, z2, t2, etc. Okay, and then you do some multiplications at like the times symbol. If you keep going down through the next Hadamard, there's a times which has two inputs coming in from the same place. That's a squaring, etc. So this is a whole computation with a bunch of inputs. Some of which, of course, are assumed to be non-zero. You might, if you're good at pattern matching, recognize at least the left half of this computation. As, for example, suppose you want to take the Riemann theta functions in dimension 2 and compute the double of an input. So compute theta of 2 times a vector from theta of the vector. Well, you can't do that from just a single theta function, but from some theta functions, you can do that. And if you choose four appropriate theta functions as x2, y2, z2, t2, well, you have to square them, plug them into this diagram as x2, y2, z2, t2, go through the Hadamard transform, multiply by some constants that depend on which theta functions you're talking about, then do more multiplications, and again, a Hadamard. So the first top, the top left is going through some 2-2 isogeny, then you do another Hadamard, another, well, a bunch of squarings, some more multiplications by some more constants that are for that particular theta that you're looking at, and then you end up with theta of 2 times the same input. A little harder to recognize is what's happening on the right half of the picture, integrated with the left half. What makes this entire picture interesting for Gaudry and Schoest and various other people is that this is doing what's called a ladder step, which means that there is some group running around, and the x's and y's and so on are some coordinates. I say some coordinates because you should not think that this is a complete system of coordinates. It's non-trivial coordinates, but it's not necessarily going to be a one-to-one map from the group to the list of coordinates, x, y, z, t. But there is some algebraic group running around, which has some, in this case, p3 coordinates, x colon y colon z colon t. And what this diagram is doing, a ladder step, means you are doing doubling of some group element and addition of two, well, that group element with another group element, given the difference. So the x2, y2, and x3, y3, and so on at the top, those are some coordinates for some group elements q2 and q3, of a group that I so often tell you. And then you're also given as inputs down near the bottom here, x1, y1, z1, t1, which are the coordinates, some coordinates, the same coordinate functions of q1, which is q3 minus q2. And then the output of the diagram, assuming that the constants, the A, B, C, D, and big A, big B, et cetera, are chosen appropriately, this diagram will compute 2 times q2, which I'll call q4 for the moment, and then it'll also compute q3 plus q2, which will be q5. Weightings are kind of sensible here. And then, that's what a ladder step means, is you can do this for some list of coordinates. More generally, you could have whatever number of coordinates in whatever ambient space. Okay, if you count the number of computations on the left half of this diagram, then you see that this is remarkably fast compared to other similar ladder steps that you can write down, which are doing these types of computations. The Chudovsky brothers in particular were writing down exactly the left half of this diagram and observing that there are, as you can see, exactly 14 multiplications. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 14, 14. The two that are going away there are because, remember, we can do pre-computations on the constants here, like a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared, and all we care about are projective coordinates for the results. All of these are projective coordinates for some group. And therefore, we can rescale, for instance, d to be 1, or b to be 1, if you like. So then you have multiplication by 1. And then similarly, up at the top there, everything's projected through the diagram. So you can rescale some of the constants on the left there to be 1, and then you have 14 multiplications on the left. You should notice that with all these multiplications, 6 of the multiplications out of the 14 are still by various constants. So if you choose some thetas or a Coomer surface, if you choose the constants that are running around here so that the 1 over a squared, 1 over b squared, 1 over big A squared, and so on are all small integers, then you can just do a few additions instead of these expensive multiplications. You make everything much, much faster. The right half of the picture was extracted from theta formulas by Gaudry. It seems likely that the Chudnovsky brothers actually knew this, but they didn't state anything in their paper which said this operation count. Might be worth trying to dig into some archives to figure this out. But anyway, Gaudry observed that the whole picture takes 25 multiplications. So on the right side, there's only 4, 4, and then, well, again, you rescale the little x1, y1, z1, t1 so that you save one multiplication. Only 25 multiplications in the picture to compute double of a point and sum of that point with another point, given the difference between the two points. All right, I still haven't told you what the group is and what the coordinates are, but let me give you a partial description of that by telling you what the coordinates land on, namely a traditional, highly symmetric Coomer surface. The slides say original Coomer surface. So here's completely explicit expression for this Coomer surface. I'm not going to go through the formulas. I am going to show you, one of the nice things about being here is you can look stuff up in the library. In a small font here, you can see from Coomer's 1864 paper introducing Coomer surfaces, he had exactly the surface. Okay, what you see right here is some of the parameter relations and the curve equation, aside from some irrelevant minus 2 choices, scalings in the notation. None of this has good reduction in 2, so I don't care about the 2s. If you look elsewhere in the paper, you can find the other parameter relations that the a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared is the simplest expression for a node on this Coomer surface. Okay, there's something misleading which will be important for me later, so I want to address it right now. If you look at Coomer's description of what he's doing as trying to understand quartic surfaces that have 16 singular points, then, well, you find several expressions for this in his paper. He writes down several particular quartic surfaces which, well, with different parameterizations and different ways of rearranging the variables, which do all have 16 singular points, but even though they're geometrically all answering the same question, they're arithmetically different. He assumes, for instance, that you can always compute square roots. He does actually briefly consider what happens with real numbers, But I think all the square roots he needs are things which are obviously positive in that case, so he doesn't get trapped in any interesting rationality conditions. What we actually need for that diagram that I showed you to be a fast computation is that the little a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared, and evidently therefore also the big a squared, etc., that those are, well, rational and as small as possible. So they have to be defined over whatever field you're working with. In Kummer's case, working with the complex numbers, of course he doesn't worry about taking square roots of things. I guess the one thing that you should extract from the generic description here without absorbing all the formulas is that this Kummer surface is something where it comes from comes from a Jacobian where you have full two torsion. And that's what you need to see the 16 singular points. But it also has a little bit more. So it is not correct arithmetically that this is classifying all quartic surfaces, which are Kummer surfaces of Jacobians of genus 2 hyperelliptic curves where you have full 2 torsion. It's a little bit more restrictive because you have to compute some square roots. And I'm emphasizing this because it will be important later. Okay, so to complete the description, there is, of course, some genus 2 hyperelliptic curve running around where I won't inflict the formulas on you. There is a Jacobian of that, which has the usual Jacobian mod plus or minus 1. That's how we talk about Kummer surfaces nowadays. Is in many books, Kummer surface is just defined as Jacobian of a genus 2 hyperelliptic curve, mod plus or minus 1. But that is much too generic to allow fast computations. And for Gaudry and Schoest and many other people, it's very important to have nice formulas, fast computations, which only seem to be allowed in the case of these more restrictive surfaces. Of course, geometrically it's the same thing, but okay. There is some standard map in the case of these particular k's, there's some standard map 2k from some Jacobian J, which I'll briefly call capital X, which defines exactly the coordinates x, y, z, t. And then, that's at this point, I believe I've defined everything aside from not having shown you the formulas for the map X. Okay, once you know how to do this computation quickly, then you can compute n times a point quickly. At least you can compute the squared theta coordinates, these k coordinates, Kummer coordinates, of n times a point given the coordinates of the point. Because if you want, for instance, I don't know, let's take 7 times a point. We can start with the point and then take 2 times a point. You know how to do that from the left half of the diagram. And then figure out, say, 3 times a point. Because you can add 2p plus p because you know the difference, which is p. And then from 2 and 3, you can get to, say, 4 and 5. And then because, you know, 3 minus 2, and therefore you can get 3 plus 2. And continuing in this way, maybe I didn't aim very well for 7, but you can keep doubling, and if you aim properly, you end up with any integer n, which has, say, at most k bits, any non-negative integer n, or, well, negative integers, you just get the same results, by doing k copies of this latter step. All right, the reason that standard is in quotes on this slide is that if you actually look for formulas for this, then you find a problem. There's, of course, the Castles-Flynn stuff online, an old book. But that is not using this Kummer surface. It is using some very generic J mod plus or minus 1 without the symmetries, without the fast arithmetic, and that is not what Gaudry and Schoest are interested in. So you look in, say, a paper from Gaudry in 2007 or various follow-up papers, and they say, well, here's how you write down from the a squared, b squared, et cetera, here's how you write down a particular Rosenheim curve, so hyperelliptic curve where you see the full 2 torsion, and then take Mumford coordinates on that Rosenheim curve. Here's a completely explicit map to the following Kummer surface, and none of these papers get the details right. I'm not claiming that in our paper we get the details right, but we have, as displays in the paper, actual SAGE scripts, and those get the details right. So if we've managed to do something by hand, and if I have formulas on these slides, don't trust those, just go to the SAGE scripts, which we have, and those work. That's all computer verified. So SAGE scripts get all the details of these formulas right. It's quite a mess to take all the theta functions in the literature, all the theta relations, Frobenius identities, and so on, and try to actually extract correct formulas from them. This is not a new phenomenon. It was an entertaining quote from Mumford's first theta paper in 1966. He says there are several thousand formulas in this paper. He might have been slightly exaggerating, but I'm not sure. which allows some ambiguities. In other words, yeah, I'm not sure which definition I really should be using here, and should I square this, negate that, etc., should I prove this way, that way. These occur in definitions and theorems. I have made a superhuman effort to achieve consistency and even to make correct statements. Maybe some of the theorems actually match some of the definitions. But I still cannot guarantee the results. He's pretty confident that his paper is not entirely correct. Not all the formulas are correct. I'm still entertained by the superhuman effort part. I think that's the sort of thing you can write when you're in your 20s. Nowadays, well, yeah, Mumford's superhuman. We're not superhuman, but we have computers and we know how to use them, so use SAGE. SAGE is better than superhuman. It actually gives you correct formulas. While I'm quoting the literature, let me quote from Vey some comments about the Coomer surface. So Coomer did not see the direction of theta functions, did not see the fast doubling or any of the group structure running around here. That, as Vey says, was noticed in 1877 by Cayley and by Borchardt. Coomer's example, Vey says, and he has various other positive comments about this. Of course, we credit Coomer with Coomer surfaces. Coomer's example is of particular value at a time when it is again realized by algebraic geometers that the detailed study of well-chosen special varieties remains one major road to progress in their field. I guess this is the sort of thing that you write when you're not in your 20s. Let me get back to my story. The motivation for Gaudry and Schoest to look at this type of computation was, of course, cryptography. What they wanted to do was find a genus 2 curve over a prime field suitable for use in public key cryptography. Now, let me just briefly remind you what cryptography is. I hope to have defined all the words in my title before I finish my talk. Cryptography, in the case of elliptic curves, is there's some standard point that everybody knows on some pretty big elliptic curve over some pretty big finite field, and that, let's say, prime field. And then everybody knows this point P, and I take some secret integer A, I multiply A times P, and then I send that out to you. And someone in the audience, say Frank, picks a secret number B, multiplies B times the point P that everybody knows, sends me the BP, and now we cross multiply, we both know A times B times P, but it's not obvious to anybody else, seeing AP and BP, it's not obvious what A times B times P is, because only we know the A and the B. Now, if you change elliptic curves to other groups, the main game that's being played here is try to find the fastest group for doing these A times P computations, with a little restriction. At this point you're thinking, fastest group, how about the multiplicative group? How about the additive group? How about the zero group? That's really fast. But there's this restriction that we would like to have the attacker not able to figure out A from A times P, and the P that everybody knows. And then, well, the additive group, not so good for that from that perspective. The multiplicative groups, still not so good because of index calculus. Elliptic curve groups seem safe, and genus 2 hyperelliptic curves seem safe. So specifically, what Gaudry and Schoest write down is they take over the field F2 to the 127 minus 1, which is a reasonable size for cryptography. They computed a certain Jacobian, a certain hyperelliptic curve. The Jacobian of that hyperelliptic curve has size, of course, around 2 to the 254, which, for all the attacks that we know, they take way more than 2 to the 100 time to break this. Someone was asking before for a definition of time. I'll be happy to get into that, but anyway. Yeah, so it's let's say, all of the methods that are known will take the number of group operations involved, where you can also ask how expensive is a group operation, the number of group operations involved in all of the fastest methods known to break this problem. I'm choosing a quantifier order carefully there. Take more than 0.885 times square root of the biggest prime order in the group size group operations. So if the number of points on the Jacobian is around 2 to the 254, then you can imagine that, well, you could have way more than 2 to the 200 as a prime dividing that group order, and then it would be more than 0.886 square root of 2 to the 200, so more than 2 to the 100 group operations for the fastest methods that are known, where fastest is defined relative to time, not relative to number of group operations. Okay, so this is big enough for making a really hard computation for somebody to figure out A from A times B and from P. And these formulas that the Chudnovsky brothers and Gaudry were looking at are really, really fast formulas. I'll get to the comparison to elliptic curves in a moment. Here was the computation that took a million CPU hours, looking through a whole lot of A squared, B squared, C squared, D squared, and counting points on a whole lot of genus 2 hyperelliptic curve, well, on Jacobian's finding characteristic polynomials of Frobenius, the usual Stove-Pila approach. What Gaudrian shows found was a Jacobian where the number of points on the Jacobian, aside from the 16 that's forced to be in there by the full 2 torsion, that number was prime. And beyond that, they also insisted on the number of points on the, say, twist of the Jacobian to also be 16 times a prime. The reason for looking at the twist is that if somebody sends you a point on the Coomer surface, then you don't know without solving some equations, inverting that X map, you don't know whether you're actually looking at a point which came from the Jacobian or came from the twist. So if somebody sends you a point which is actually on the twist, then if you think about it for a moment, you realize it's really important for that one to also not be smooth, preferably have big prime factors. Okay. Lots of optimization of the genus 2 point counting and then trying it for enough curves to find both of these Jacobian orders being approximately prime. This is what took a million CPU hours.
But just to find this one example.
To find this one example, yeah.
One curve over one field.
One curve over one field. Genus 2 point counting is not very fast. Of course, they did all the tricks they could to speed it up and throw away curves as soon as it was clear that J of FP had a 3 torsion point, for instance.
Did they insist also on adding x squared, b squared, c squared, d squared, very small?
Yes, yes. So they searched through. So it was, of course, there are faster ways to write down Jacobians, and I'll be talking about those for the rest of the talk. But what they wanted, because remember, in that diagram that was their motivation, the a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared, and the big a squared and so on, which are the Hadamard transform of those were showing up as things to multiply by. And multiplying by 3 is a whole lot faster than multiplying by some big 127-bit number. So they save a whole lot of time in the group operations, well, in the scalar multiplication, by finding small a squared, b squared, c squared, subject to the security requirements of having these numbers be approximately prime. Okay, are there more questions about what Gaudry and Shost did? I see some notes. So, how does this compare to elliptic curve cryptography? Well, at this point, you have to look at all the things people have been doing to try to make elliptic curves run fast and all the different shapes of elliptic curves. And I'm not going to drag you through the details. I'll just say that, yes, this is significantly faster than elliptic curve cryptography. If the a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared are small, then this is going to be, say, 1.5 times faster than elliptic curve cryptography. And that's okay, it's not the biggest speed-up in the world, but that's enough to make people happy with the performance here and really motivates putting in a million CPU hours just to speed up, imagine, a whole lot of users using this and saving 1.5 times on each of their cryptographic operations. Maybe this is a good trade-off. Okay, if you don't have A squared, B squared, C squared, D squared being small, then it's a much closer competition. Some implementations. I did an implementation in 2006 when Gaudry announced these formulas without having any examples with small a squared, b squared, et cetera, and said, well, this is slightly faster than ECC, but okay, somebody should find small a squared, et cetera. And then, okay, after the Gaudry-Shost computation, then some newer papers saying, yeah, this is really, really fast, significantly faster than elliptic curve cryptography. Unless you take elliptic curve cryptography and start applying some extra tricks to it. So you can, instead of saying what we want to do is multiply by n by doing doublings and additions, you could say, well, okay, suppose we construct an elliptic curve that has more fast endomorphisms than just, say, doubling. So you could, for instance, write down an elliptic curve which has complex multiplication by square root of minus, either square root of minus 10 or square root of minus 40. I should check which one was actually the fast one. And then, I mean, certainly it has fast square root of minus 40. This is also what's called a Q curve. It has a 2 isogeny to its complex conjugate. It's defined over a field which has conjugation. This is something which is about as fast. It depends which CPU you're looking at, whether it's faster or slower than the
Coomer surface implementations. But it's cheating somewhat on the performance because it's sending uncompressed points through the network, which means it's saving time on things like computing square roots, which make up pretty much the performance difference. And most importantly, it's not at a similar security level because it doesn't have this twist security feature, which was major part of Gaudry and Chost taking all the time that they did. The competition between genus 2 and genus 1 for how quickly can you do group operations for about the same size of Jacobian. Well, this is something where genus 2, you can, of course, write down genus 2 curves with CM as well and take advantage of that in computing n times a point. But it doesn't seem to be necessary that even without doing that, just having a kind of random, no special structure genus 2 curve, it's still certainly competitive with, I would say, even a little faster than, and once you pay attention to security, it's just better than the fastest that elliptic curve cryptography can do. And of course, if you want even more speed, you could try also applying CM. So, summary of what Gaudry and Chost accomplished, plus various implementation work, is that this particular Jacobian with the coefficients that were down before, the 3 and 22, whatever it was, that is the fastest way to compute n times q, given n and given q, at a high security level, Jacobian size around 2 to the 256-ish, and twist also secure. That's the fastest way we know how to do that is with this Coomer surface. The thing is that that's not actually the only operation. Remember my definition of cryptography. I have a secret number A, and I multiply that by some P. P is not an input. P is a standard, which I can do pre-computations of. The standard can do pre-computations. So, for instance, someone could pre-compute 2 to the 100 times P, and that makes computing A times P much faster. So the basic operation that I've been talking about, where the Coomer surface is really fast, that's something where the speed for that operation doesn't necessarily predict the speed for any other operation. And in fact, we don't know how to use the Coomer surface for doing any of these other operations quickly, like adding 2 points, or compute M times P plus N times Q, given P and Q and M and N as inputs. That's not something where the Coomer surface works, because, well, the Coomer surface, to add 2 points, you need to know their difference. And that slows things down quite a lot, needing to know what the difference is. All of these other operations, which are not taking both N and P as input, or N and Q and computing N times Q, all these other operations, the speed records that we have are for elliptic curve cryptography, rather than genus 2 hyperelliptic curves. So for various cryptographic operations, like generating keys, that's computing A times P, or Frank computing B times P, the Jacobian or the Coomer surface is not competitive with elliptic curve cryptography. And this is the motivation for using, in cryptography, a curve which is hyper and elliptic, which means that the group you write down simultaneously supports the fastest genus 2 formulas, which are the ones that I've shown you, and supports the fastest genus 1 formulas. So the group is, first of all, an elliptic curve group over fp squared. So there's some big prime p, and there's some elliptic curve where we choose the curve to be an Edwards curve. That's how we get the fastest addition formulas. Lets us do most of the operations the fastest way that we know how to do any group operations. Of course, that elliptic curve over fp squared is the same as the Weyl restriction of the same elliptic curve. Restriction of scalars from fp squared down to fp, plug in fp into that Weyl restriction, and that is the same group. I should emphasize that the moduli space for w has 2 moduli, 2 parameters in it. 1 element of fp squared specified by 2 elements of fp. And now you view that same group as being a Jacobian of some genus 2 hyperelliptic curve. So you have to set this up, but you can set this up. There will, if you write down everything properly, be a fast isogeny between this Weyl restriction and some Jacobian J of some hyperelliptic curve H of genus 2 over FP. And then I told you before, there's a standard map where we do have correct formulas now for this map from the Jacobian to the Coomer surface. So composing these things, you get, take the isogeny and then x from j to k, that gives you a map from the Weyl restriction from this group, gives you a map to k, which is pretty low degree and pretty fast. And That is, well, giving you k-coordinates, where now you can do the computations with the diagram I showed you at the beginning. So in this group, which is an elliptic curve group, directly supports the fast elliptic curve operations, you can also apply the k-formulas. Okay, yay, very restriction. So you have to set up the situation, but there's an obvious problem here, which is that the hyperelliptic curves have three parameters. So what does that mean for how small the a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared can be? Well, okay, it's projective, so let's say throw away the d squared. How small are the a squared, b squared, c squared going to be? There's probability only 1 over p of a squared, b squared, c squared being compatible with some elliptic curve over fp squared. Because there's p cubed choices of a squared, b squared, c squared, and there's only p squared choices of elliptic curve. Well, 2b squared choices, but the point is there will be only about a 1 over p chance of a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared being compatible with this picture. And therefore, you can't expect a squared, b squared, c squared to be smaller than something like p to the 1/3, if you have three of them, or p to the 1/4, if you take all four of them. Except, you can lift everything to q. So we have examples, I'll show you examples at the end of the talk, where a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared are all very small numbers, and it's still compatible with the whole picture on the top. And the reason that works is that, okay, throw away the fp and the fp squared and put in q and some, well, q joint square root of delta, where delta's not too big, and then there are solutions to the Diophantine equations that you write down here. And then, well, okay, let me dive into the details of this, and that gives us small a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared, therefore the fastest k, the fastest Kummer surface formulas, along with the fastest elliptic curve formulas.
Dan, is p fixed? Do you get to choose p?
Yes. So I'll show you examples with 2 to the 127 minus 1. We have enough examples over q that, yeah, you can pick whatever p you want. This is not a theorem, what I just said, but we observe that we have lots of examples over q. Okay, another nice feature of this setup is that you don't need the million CPU hours anymore, because, of course, it's much, much easier compared to genus 2-point counting. Genus 1-point counting is trivial. I mean, okay, you could maybe publish a paper on that 30 years ago, but nowadays you can't publish a paper on speeding up elliptic curve point count. Well, maybe you can, okay. But doing cryptographic size elliptic curve point counting is totally trivial computation. I mean, you know, thanks for all the work, now it's done, compared to genus 2, where it's still a hard problem for big sizes of p. So it's really easy to do the point counting on E, and therefore on W, and therefore on J. And, okay, I mean, we know how big these groups are. This approach, so we did not introduce this idea for skipping the million CPU hours. This is something where there's various papers, for instance, GoJS and Smart, where they're saying, oh, here's how you can construct this constellation of E, well, not an Edwards curve, that was before Edwards curves, but an elliptic curve E with a fast isogeny to at least, well, a 2-2 isogeny to some Jacobian J. They set that up in characteristic 2. They said odd characteristic was hard, but then there were various papers saying, okay, you can do this in odd characteristic. Even the last papers here do that along with CM. So if you want to also have some more endomorphisms, then you can do that as well. Okay, so we didn't introduce this part of doing fast genus 2 point counting. The new part here is setting this up with very fast computations in the group by having the parameters all being small. All right, here's the details. So, Slotin curves. This is the particular construction we start from the 2003 Slotin paper. What Slotin says is take a big odd prime p and choose some parameters r, s, and beta, and then I'm going to assume that various denominators and such are discriminants, that everything you see is going to be non-zero. I won't write down all the technical hypotheses in detail. So r, s, and beta are elements of fp squared. Beta is not going to be allowed to be an fp. That's important. I'll write bar for the Frobenius of fp squared over fp. And now here is the right side of a Slotin curve. What do you see here? So maybe start from the bottom. U is 1 minus beta z, so linear polynomial in some variable z. V is conjugate of that. And then take rv to the 6th plus sv to the 4th u squared plus s bar v squared u to the 4th plus r bar u to the 6th. And then divide by its degree 6. Coefficient, so you have now a monic polynomial, and that's what I'm calling G. Okay, this is actually contained in FP, because if you conjugate it, you see you just flip around the left to right. And there's this Holton curve. You have y squared equals this polynomial g. So this is defined over fp. For not having to write that denominator again, let me call the denominator omega squared. The denominator is in fp, so there's some omega in fp squared, whose square is that denominator. And now, let's also define an elliptic curve, which is y squared equals rx cubed plus sx squared plus s bar x plus r bar. Now, it should be obvious that there's a map from H to E, non-trivial map, which is the following. Let's actually calculate this. Suppose you take omega y over u cubed and plug that in for the y on the elliptic curve. What do you get? You get omega squared y squared over u to the 6th, where y is coming from the Slotin curve. So y squared is g, and then the omega squared cancels the denominator, and then the divided by u to the 6th comes out of the numerator. So what we have left is r v over u to the 6th plus s v over u to the 4th plus s bar, etc. And, well, that's exactly the right side of the elliptic curve equation evaluated at v squared over u squared. So just in your head, you see that this is a map from H to E. Okay, and then you go through standard and completely standard way. You get, take the w coordinates of this map. So now you have a map from H to W, and then you get a map from the Jacobian, which I'll call iota prime. And one of the things that we do in this paper is get correct fast formulas for iota prime by simple interpolation. This is a point where people would often try to say, how do you do elimination of variables and you work in a pretty nasty polynomial ring, and it actually takes a fair amount of computer time to do. You don't need to do that. You just take some random inputs to this map from H to E, and then you take two of the random inputs, add them together, get from J to E, from J to W, and then you just interpolate those examples of this map, and that gives you formulas for the isogeny iota prime. I'm saying isogeny because this is, in fact, a 2-2 isogeny. What we actually need is to go the other way. So this is iota. It's easy to compute formulas for that by the same technique. Well, okay, it's some work, and we have in our paper the resulting formulas. There's some 2-2 isogeny from W to J, where you can find formulas for that in our paper. Okay, so now we have a Weyl restriction, all of these formulas, the iota and iota prime, explicit coefficients in FP. I'll skip the parenthetical comment on other descriptions of iota. And at this point, well, this is what Slotin did, aside from actually having formulas for the isogenies. So that sets up, a completely explicit hyperelliptic curve and a completely explicit elliptic curve with a certain conjugation structure where the Weyl restriction of the elliptic curve is isogenous to the, quickly isogenous to the Jacobian of a genus 2, explicit genus 2 hyperelliptic curve.
So your Mumford coordinates for the Jacobian, which I understand you're necessarily unique to your Kummer surface, but are those on a y squared equals a monic sextic?
Yeah, so you have to choose one of the roots of the degree 6 polynomial in order to define the Jacobian, and then you move over to Rosenheim.
Infinity you're using.
You pick one point. Well, they're not at infinity to begin with. You pick one point, move that to infinity, then you're in Rosenheim form. Yeah. Okay, so how do we make the Kummer surface run quickly? How do we get the a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared to be small? Well, this requires actually looking at the formulas for a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared, which are shown here in terms of Rosenheim form after picking some point, moving that to infinity. And, well, we also need that degree 6 does factor in the first place to get the full 2 torsion. It has to split completely. And now, maybe given my time limit, I'll skip the detailed calculations, but just say that you can rationally express all you need for the 2 torsion to completely exist, but you can't apparently rationally express, well, it's not, there might be rational curves running around, but maybe not from the experiments. We certainly haven't found them. You do need certain square roots to exist. And there's no reason a priori for those square roots to exist, except that you can lift everything to Q. So here's what the final computation looks like. You set up exactly the same picture for a bunch of Q adjoined square root of deltas, where delta is small. So we take doesn't matter really what beta is, take some small elements, S1, S2, S3, of Q adjoint square root of delta of norm 1, so it takes some A plus B square root of deltas over A minus B square root of deltas, and then define R and S according to the formulas, which I'm not going to go through, define the Scholten polynomial G according to, well, Scholten's definition, define the lambda mu nu from Rosenheim after, well, you get some choices of what to move to infinity and what to make, I mean, you have several choices how to get to Rosenheim, and then, well, hope that the various square roots which are defining A squared, B squared, C squared, D squared, hope that those are small. No reason a priori to expect that this will work, but if it does, then we're done. And, well, we tried this, and we got lots of examples. For instance, for Q adjoint square root of minus 67, here's a completely explicit, not very big. I mean, this started from the parameters in the search were the 16.3, 116, 120. Starting from those, you go through the recipe and you get pretty small a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared for completely explicit Scholten curve, which, like every Scholten curve, corresponds to a very restriction, has a 2-2 isogeny to a very restriction of an elliptic curve. And then two more examples. We found lots and lots of examples. This next one should convince you that there's lots and lots of examples. If you check that the number of points on the Jacobian here is 32 times a prime, that's a pretty restrictive condition. And then if you also see that the number of points on the twist of the elliptic curve over FP is 12 times a prime, that's even more restrictive. So obviously we had lots of examples to be able to extract this one. And again, the A squared, B squared, C squared, D squared are pretty small. And finally, my last slide. This one's maybe not quite 32 times a prime for the size of the Jacobian. It's 720 times a prime, so it's a little less secure. But it's really spectacularly small, a squared, b squared, c squared, d squared. These were actually within the region that Gaudry and Schost were searching, but of course they threw it away because they were insisting on only doing point counting for generic curves, and they thought, oh, well, if you have an example where geometrically everything splits into two elliptic curves, then what's the point of counting points on that with fancy techniques? So they just threw everything away, and in particular, they didn't count points on this curve. So this is a good curve to use for cryptography. Question?
Should your FPs be FP squareds on the E's?
Should the E, oh yes, I'm sorry, that should be FP squared, FP squared, same for the others there. Yeah, so the elliptic curve is defined over FP squared, the H and the J are defined over FP, W, of course, is also defined over FP. All right, so that's it. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Yeah.
How many million hours did you take?
This was a pretty easy computation. I mean, it's mainly doing point counting on a bunch of elliptic curves. And of course, there's the Diophantine search, but that wasn't too bad either.
Okay.
The reason you're working with to the 127 minus 1 is because arithmetic is fast.
Yeah.
You're still doing like 128-bit arithmetic. Is there any reason you don't look at like a 64-bit prime and change all the FPs to P squared and P squared to P to the fourth and so on? Would that help at all?
Well, yeah, you could use like 2 to the 61 minus 1, it's close enough to 2 to the 64. I mean, similar security level. But somehow nobody's been able to get the arithmetic running faster on F2 to the 61 minus 1 to the 4th than on F2 to the 127 minus 1 squared. And there's various security concerns. I don't think in that case that any of the latest attacks actually break. If you have an elliptic curve over F2 to the 61 minus 1 to the 4th, I don't think anybody's able to break it, but it scares people in a way that genus 2 doesn't scare people.
And also, all this speed test you talked about earlier, is that like with dedicated hardware, or is it just software and sort of mass-produced processes?
So all the computations, a million CPU hours was just regular.
No, I mean the testing, which group operations faster, for actually doing signing and encrypting and so on.
Typically for your typical laptop CPUs, Intel, AMD kind of CPUs. People have also done some implementations for smartphones and such, and there's a whole detailed. I could spend an hour talking about just implementation surveys, but people want to make, on your typical computer, people want to make crypto run fast. And so being able to save, say, a factor of 1.5 in that's a significant speed up if you're doing crypto frequently, as a lot of people with typical big internet servers are doing.
Okay, let's thank Ben and all the speakers.